Welcome to Shine On, the podcast where older people share stories. I'm Angie Smiles. In this podcast, we talk to creative older people in Leeds and find out about their lives. Today's episode is called Realised Worlds, and it's a conversation with Clem Archibald. Clem is a painter in his 70s who has lived in Burley for most of his life. He was born in St Kitts, but grew up in Leeds from the age of seven amongst the wartime munition dumps. Clem never forgot Caribbean skies and palm trees which feature in his landscapes. I visited Clem with Lily, the Shine On producer. We spoke to Clem about his experiences of racism, how he became a painter, and what inspires him. When did you first become interested in trying art?
It was probably when I first started crawling. I always liked scrawling on things. Mm. And I always, reading definitely was my first passion. Mm-hmm. I read everything. I've got a collection of books. I've given a lot away to a girl that I helped with. But apart from that, I've got a collection of books like all Dickens, all the Kipling's, you know.
They feed your imagination.
Yeah, because that's all I dreamed about before coming to England. Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn and those kind of adventures like Robinson Crusoe, things like that. They were what interested me as a kid. And I'd read, I was interested in reading about the early history of American, as you know. From before the white people went there, and afterwards I studied Indians in Canada, because most people don't realise that most of those Indians in America came from, they were driven out of Canada. Yeah, so I had a very interesting and very loving, they were very loving, my grandparents, and my father came here when I was four, so I didn't see him until we got to Southampton. And my mother's saying there's lots of black people behind a rope waiting, you know, to greet. Yeah. And like my mother, there he is. And I'm like, I didn't recognise him.
And so when that was the 1950s, wasn't
1957.
It?
And when he came over, I didn't like him. Because I'd been with my mum and my grandparents, who were very loving all them years. Oh. And suddenly this strange guy's coming up, and I didn't like him.
No.
I didn't like him, you know.
What was your first experience when you first arrived and to Southampton?
First experience? Snow. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. The rooftops were covered in it.
Equator, isn't it.
The journey from Southampton, all the fields were covered in it. And like, coming from an island that's 27 miles long and you've only been about maybe a mile, you've only gone as
it's
far
really
as a mile
green,
or 2 miles of it, and then you see him field lasting a 3-hour, 4-hour journey from Southampton on a train, and you're like, I'm just totally amazed. I'll never forget it. It's still in my memory about all them fields and all the cows and sheep, and you know, which you wouldn't see over there. And then obviously there's trains, which we didn't have over there.
No.
And what do you need trains for? The island's 27 miles long, Christ's sake.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't a lot of automobiles over there. You didn't need them. My other granddad, my mother's father, had a car. I remember he lived on a banana plantation outside of town. But that'll have only been about 2-3 miles. Probably another half an hour and you're going to be at sea. But the island's got one road and you go around like that. You've got off-roads going to different... But to get round the island, you just go Ponds Road.
Yes.
It just goes round like that. You know, so a very small island.
So you were talking about getting a job as a DJ at the skating rink.
Well, I wasn't very good as a drummer. And the band was really much more musically professional than I was. Mm. So I ended up managing them. Mm. Got them a new drummer. And they were doing gigs, and I was getting gigs for them. Because by then I was working for Mecca, but the DJ they had there was a friend of mine, Daz Darwell. It was one of these little, you know, seaside comedy type guys that his father used to go and do tricks, trick people at seaside, you know, one of them with three things
oh,
and
yeah,
a pea and
all. My dad was a magician.
Yeah, well, he was, and he was also, I mean, most of them in those days were con men. Not in the sense that they're going to con you out of loads of money. Old man Darwell, he was a lovely guy. So I learned a lot of the older old guys around here, of the people that really, you know, our theirs, you know, they'd be talking about black people like, yeah. And I'd go, hang on a minute. They'd go, no, you're one of us. We'd always like that, but in my mind, no anger, just, you know, I couldn't understand it for a long time. But so when Daz Darwell, we used to have all-nighters.
Oh, yeah.
So Halloween, Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, all those kind of holidays. We used to have an all-nighter. Which the boss used to go, I mean, they were actually training me for system, you know, management.
Sounds hard work.
Well, I was there 24/7. Yeah. I could sleep there. I had a room upstairs, bigger, twice as big as this. There were loads of them on the balcony upstairs and a sofa that were like this. Proper posh stuff, you know, and a wardrobe type thing. And a place to drink, you had a bar. You had a Milky Way bar, burger bar, you know, and a restaurant. So you could, I could not go home for months on end living there easily, because we used to do all the work in there ourselves. Every now and again, the floor needed sanding, and then painting in this to stop it from being icy, you know, just make it give it a grip. So the staff used to have to do that all night, and then next day it's open again because it was open three sessions a day. 7 days a week. So I couldn't be there all the time. I ended up cleaning windows. We did everything. Mm. It wasn't staff, but we were all like a family.
You said that art makes you happy. Painting makes you happy.
It doesn't necessarily make me happy. It absorbs me.
And like
other things absorb me, like boxing or roller skating. I'm in a world of my own. I'm in a world where nobody can hurt me and nobody can tell me what to do. I'm doing everything, you know.
It's true, you've got a lot of control when you're the artist, haven't you?
Yeah,
it's your decision what you do.
I mean, if you want to do a flower that looks like a dustbin,
you can do it. Yeah.
There's no right or wrong, there's no perspective.
No.
There's no, you know, I mean, that's what mainly I like to project in my painting.
I've noticed that a lot of your paintings have the orange sky.
Yeah, I do. I like, well, it's not so much that, to be honest with you. When I did that, I thought I was painting because I've had eye trouble. Now I can hardly see.
Have you got glaucoma?
Yeah.
Mm.
I painted that, actually, for a real landscape. And I thought that I was painting yellow. And when I could see properly another day, I think I took a picture of it on my phone and looked at it, and it was orange, and it wasn't supposed to be.
Oh.
So then I started, none of that sky will be left probably when I've finished what I'm doing here. There'll be bits of it, clumps of it, but the thing I've got in mind for that is, mine is creating other worlds, and I think that's what they labelled that exhibition as, something other world, and that's what I used to think, you know.
Agency of realized.
Yeah, that's
worlds.
It. Yeah, well, that I didn't call it that, but when I saw the title, I thought that's exactly what I'm, you know, because you can see in some of them different going back in time, and then
it's slightly Star Wars, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then, well, this one is, but the others aren't. You know, you've got like some very, very sort of wildlife attack. I forget a lot of words lately that describe things. But you know, like it's more not developed, a kind not developed kind of world I try to, or developed in a way that nobody's seen before. You know, it's something that I've made up that people can recognise as being somewhere, but not knowing where. That kind of attitude I paint with.
This one's got walls in it. It sort of reminds me, Pink Floyd, another brick in the wall.
Well, that's where my inspiration came from. from the 70s, psychedelic sort of, I was into folk music and things like that. And like I said, when bands like Cream came out,
yeah,
and they had, like, you know, long before Pink Floyd, I think it was, there was, I think it was Cream. And I've got bowling pins that I got from the bowling alley that was below the Roll Arena,
oh, yeah,
when that closed.
Yeah.
That I painted stuff like psychedelic stuff on. But this is not psychedelic. This is something I started because of...
There's a lot of mechanical looking things in,
yeah,
here, like,
well,
nuts and bolts.
Right.
Eyes.
Now, I'm glad you've said that. I'm really glad you've said that, because nobody else has ever said that. And I've never told anybody. I've explained that it is industrial.
Yes.
Industrial in the sense that when I was a kid, you know where the viaduct is on Kirtle Road?
Yes.
Right. You go under the viaduct, mm, where Machine Mart is on the left.
Yeah.
And under the right-hand side, just before the viaduct, immediately before, there was a path leading to some houses that led to Burley Road. And there was also a cafe bar. And on the other side of the, and then also there was an ammunition dump from the Second World War.
Oh, wow.
And on the other side where Machine Mart is...
Is this an ammunition dump?
Not just the ammunition dump, but it also reflects that in those days a lot of houses were getting pulled down and nothing,
yes,
was getting done with them.
Yes.
But even here, where I am now, this is only 30-odd years old, maybe at the most 40. But I remember streets levelled, back-to-back houses that were totally disgusting, unfit to live in. They just levelled them.
Oh, I used to live in Kelso Place, and that's, that's still there, and
yeah,
that's unfit,
yeah,
to live
but
in.
But down here,
no,
they were disgusting to live in back,
yeah,
in those days.
Yeah.
They just levelled all these. Even Yorkshire TV. Yorkshire TV were built after the roller skating rink. So you had that ammunition dump on both sides of the road. It was owned by a guy a lot older than us. We were like 12, 10, 11,
yeah,
12, 13 for the years we played on that. And we'd find all sorts of mortar bombs, grenades, guns.
Goodness.
That were supposed to be decommissioned, and some of them weren't. You know, I had a collection in my living room, and my father came home from work one day, and there was an amnesty about handing weapons in. But they were not, I wasn't using them. Kid, you know, they were on the wall, and I had a mortar bomb on my telly in my bedroom up in the attic. So I came home from school. Where's all my stuff gone? Oh, my father went and handed them in to the police.
Oh, gosh.
And they said to him, "Where do you get this from, the mortar bomb?" And he said, "Well, my son gets it all. I don't know where he gets it from." They wouldn't know. They didn't go out. They went to work and come home. Mm. That was it. So he said, "Listen, if this thing had fallen off and gone off, there'd have been a hole where your house was."
Yes.
I didn't,
yes,
know it was live.
Yeah.
There was all that stuff was supposed to be decommissioned,
yeah,
but you imagine being a soldier. You've been getting fired on for 6 years, and you get told at the end of it, everybody's gone home and you've got to do extra duties, defusing all this.
Oh,
oh yeah, whatever. Yeah, we're finished, mate. See, yeah, I want to go home. You know, you can't blame them. So
we found a box
of hand grenades.
Yeah.
So that's my interpretation of what that place,
yeah,
of what, not just that, it was streets and streets of houses pulled down.
Yes.
And you could see bits of brick sticking out. Because we used to play amongst it all when we were kids.
Your paintings are very colourful. And yet, if you think about houses that have been pulled down,
it's not colourful. Yeah, but they're colourful when they're up. Because they look like something that you recognise. When they're down, they just look like something that you want,
yeah,
you'd like to get rid of.
Rubble.
But rubble can be beautiful when you're around it and you're playing it. When you're kids, we used to be looking for lead pipes to take to the scrapyard,
yeah, yeah,
or something like that,
yeah,
you know. So
it,
you,
yeah,
spent a lot of time around things like that. Kids today, they don't do things like this. I wouldn't, if I could go back in time and change whether I live now or whether I live then, I'd definitely live then. Because now it's not sustainable now.
Me and Angie were talking to you about you know, we were going to ask you questions about being an artist, and you said, oh, I don't see myself as an artist.
I don't.
Can you tell us why you don't?
Because I never went to school for it or anything. I've just always liked to draw things, and I've never been, well, I've done art college since. I did it when I was in my 40s, but it's, I saw painters as being people who studied, you know. I looked at art world and through the eyes of people like Leonardo and all them, but I knew that I wasn't nowhere near that good. So my fascination for this kind of art, you know, just always been there, to be honest. I've always looked at people who can do, from people who can do, like the Mona Lisa, for instance, which I don't think is such a great painting.
I don't. I think he just made a mess of the body and cut the head off.
You know, so I've never thought of it as being a, it's the world's most famous painting. But for me, if I went to Rome, I'd only be going to Italy for one reason, and that's to go see that Sistine Chapel.
The Last Supper.
Yeah, that's the one. That is unbelievable. I mean, the guy was unbelievable. I mean...
Can I ask you, Clem, you said you went to college in your 40s.
Yeah.
Where did you go?
Art and design.
Jacob Kramer?
Yeah.
Yeah? And what did you do, a foundation course?
Art and design.
Yeah? And for how long did you do it? Was it a night class or...? Well,
it was a two-year class.
No, it was a two-year course?
Yeah, it was a full-time thing. I used to go every day.
Certainly like a diploma in art.
Yeah, I got it. I got a diploma.
And did that alter the way that you painted?
Oh, it most certainly did.
Yeah?
It most certainly did. I remember the woman that taught. She was... I wish I could have seen her after, you know, had contact with her. She was interested in, and used to put in extra time in me, because I had a son by then. I'd custody of my son, and I wanted to, coming out of DJing, I was still DJing when I was there, you could pick a few different courses, so I did a CPVE, certificate of pre-vocational education.
Yes.
So I did that, and during that you used to have all these places that you go, what do they call them, community centres, and the Commission for Racial Equality used to fund them, and every month each one of them would have a meal day where everybody, and it used to be great. It's the only time I've seen Asian people mixing with white and black people mixing all together. I've seen them mixing separately, or two of them, but not all three communities. And it ran very well. I used to love it, coming up on a month, you know, because one month you're eating Asian cooking, next month you're eating Caribbean cooking.
Isn't that great?
And people got on, and that was the only... It wasn't happening outside of this, and I loved that. So I wanted to be in that, because I had to think about a different career. I knew that I had to get another job sometime or other.
So you're thinking about art as a career?
No, never. No, I was thinking of doing some... Art came by accidentally, because I didn't know at Thomas Danby College that they had a massive big art room with all the free stuff you wanted.
It was great, wasn't it?
So I used to go in there at dinner time, or they used to go off to the pub and get food and that. Mm. I used to go in there at dinner time, and I used to sit and sketch stuff. And one day this lady came in, and she walked past the table, and then she came back and she started talking to me. Stasia Bowman, I think they called her. She's Polish. And her family came here during the war, and her father used to be the curator of some big art gallery or museum in Poland. And she was the boss there of that. So she said, "Do you do any more of these sketches?" And I said, "Yeah, but I give them away." She said, no, you need to have an exhibition. I said, "No, I'm not even an artist. I just like..." So she gave me permission to use that anytime I wanted. I never did an art course. I was doing that other course. And she spent a lot of time. And next thing you know, she said, "Right, show me what you've got." And I had about maybe 17 paintings, 20 odd paintings, and she said, right, I'm going to arrange an exhibition. And she did, in one of these community centres, and it was Burley Lodge. But it was a Burley Lodge when it was in a back-to-back house.
Yeah.
So you'd go upstairs, downstairs and upstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
Lower down from the one that's there now. If you're not Asian, you can't get, you don't get any help there. They just help Asian people now. It's all run by Asians. But then everybody could go in there. And when I went, I was very sheepish, and you know, I'm not a I'm a very private person. Publicly, I don't really sing out much. But I went that night, and one of the guy that she said, this man's looking at three paintings, and he was, and you know, will you go talk to him? He wants to find out what it's about and that. It's like one that I've just sold, and I've just remembered. It reminded me of that one because I tried to copy that one with this one, and the guy that bought it has got an MBA or something from, I think he's from Liverpool or Nottingham or somewhere like that, and he looked at it for ages before, and it reminded me of that guy. He was the head of the probation service in Leeds, the guy that bought the first one, and he kept, and he asked me to explain it. It was only about that big, and he paid me 27 quid. I didn't know what to ask. I didn't do them thinking about money.
Yeah.
I never done a painting thinking about money unless somebody's asked me to do it. And, you know, that's the only time I've thought about money when I've done one. So in the end, he bought two of my paintings. And I'm looking at the check afterwards, and I could have torn it up or burnt it. I missed that. So I tried to do it again. Mm. It never turned out the same way, but it turned out well enough.
Yes.
Like
over
it.
Over what period of time did you do all these?
Right, so when I finished work on a night from the DJing, then I'd sort of go home and stay up till, I'd be home about 3 in the morning. Mm. And I had a partner then, and she used to go crazy. I mean, absolutely.
Spend time with me, she'd think.
Absolutely mental, because I'd stay up till 10 in the morning and go to bed.
Yeah.
And wake up about 12 and go out for the day. Of course, she's at work then.
Mm.
You know, so life on, it pissed her off a bit after. It ended up breaking us up, to be honest.
What year was that exhibition in Burley Lodge Community
Centre? 87, 88, 89. Before 1990. Yeah.
And that was the first like public kind of display of the artwork that you've
and
done.
And then a lady came here from the art gallery in Leeds, and she picked the worst painting that I've ever done. It wasn't even finished. She said, I don't care. And they put it on show in the Leeds Art Gallery. And the first night I had to go down there, and there's people in suits drinking wine, and and that's a no-no for me. I don't want to be around people like that. And I stayed for about 15 minutes and I left. And they had it for over a month. I think they had it for about 5-6 weeks. And I asked, you know, I told them, I said, I can have it back now.
Our conversation with Clem ended with a particular treat. Some painting tips from a true expert.
Like this, I'll show you. Say that's your waterfall, right? You just put your paint on the brush and you just go like that. You've got to bring it down wherever the water's going. If the water's coming that way, you just do that on the background. Like you could have rocks under there and still bring the water down like that. And it's down and that's it. Then if you want to put little splashes, you just put it on a brush wet and do
and
that
flick.
And flick.
I've
flick.
Done a lot of flicking.
Yeah.
Flick
it.
Paint on.
I had to learn a lot of this stuff because joins. I used to draw all the time when I was young, but I never had paints.
Yes.
You know, so it's only when I grew up and got old enough to work and earn paints that I got paints. That's not bad for the second attempt.
Yeah.
Oil paints. But I'd spent years imagining it.
Yeah.
And the first one I did was that was the first one. It's a few years later when I was working at the roller skating arena, a woman that worked in the offices above, she'd been to Spain and she brought back this picture of a can-can, one of them.
Tarantella, flamenco.
Flamenco.
Yeah.
And there's a guy playing a guitar in a dimly lit.
Yeah, yeah.
And she wanted that memorialised, so she said, oh, will you do it? Me said, oh, yeah, of course I will, I'll do it for you. got home, I thought, no, I'm going to start. Yeah. I didn't know how to start.
Yeah.
So obviously, I need to, he's in the background, so I need to do him first. So I did. And, you know, I could paint people for fun, people, animals, fruit, plants. I could do trees for fun. So I just did him. And then the background was easy because it was all dark and a bit of flashes of light here and there. So that was easy. And then I did him, and then I did her. And that, doing that red dress with the creases in,
yeah,
was a learning. But I did it, it worked out. Gave it to her, how much do you want for it? And I just charged her what I paid for paint. But I still had,
yeah,
but I still had the paint.
And the frame.
Yeah.
And you want to get your money back,
yeah,
for the,
yeah,
frame and the paint.
Yeah, that's it. And she absolutely loved it.
If you enjoyed this, there are more Shine On podcasts to listen to. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find more extraordinary stories on our website, articles, interviews and features by and about fascinating older people in Leeds and Yorkshire. Go to www.theshinemag.com. If you have an idea for a podcast or would like to join the storytelling team, contact us at podcasts@theshinemag.com. Shine On is brought to you by the makers of Shine Magazine, with support from Chapel FM. Season 1 is funded by Leeds Inspired.